Hello, all. I'm Megan Bell, Director of Engagement at Daylight, and your host. Welcome to Illuminate Philanthropy, where every episode seeks to brighten the path of philanthropic advisory, elevate the profession, and amplify its impact. In this premiere edition, we're embarking on an insightful journey through the evolving landscape of philanthropic advising. Philanthropy isn't static. It's a dynamic field influenced by emerging trends and shifting paradigms. So if you're ready to gain valuable insight and adapt to the changing tides of philanthropy, you're in the right place. Let's dive in and illuminate the path forward together. In this series, and our third episode of Illuminate Philanthropy, Learning, Practice, and Research, we explore eight key trends shaping philanthropic advising and how advisors can adapt to these trends. We welcome Rick Peck, the philanthropy guy, to share the third of the eight trends in philanthropic advising. Rick Peck is a consultant with Daylight in our advisor practice. Rick is an independent philanthropy advisor with Rick C. Peck Consulting, LLC, working with nonprofits, donors, potential donors, and professional advisors. He is also the founder of The Philanthropy Guy, an emerging leading edge charitable giving resource hub, featuring a podcast series, an interactive website, and learning opportunities, and a book. Rick is a certified financial planner, a chartered advisor in philanthropy, and a chartered financial consultant. He holds an MBA from Baker College in Michigan and a BA from the University of Massachusetts. In short, Rick is extremely experienced and is living in this field every day, and we are so excited to have him here. Welcome, Rick. How are you?
It's a pleasure to be here, Meg. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. It's going to be great, and I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Well, I am too, Rick, and I am so pleased to have the opportunity to work with you at Daylight. You are extremely well known in the field of philanthropic advising among nonprofit community foundations and financial planners. So we're just so lucky to have your expertise to share with us today. But what I'm most curious about before we get to the trends, Rick, why do they call you the philanthropy guy?
So here's how it happened. I was sitting in a meeting of people and we were all talking together, kind of entrepreneurial types, talking about our trials and tribulations and the different things that we were hoping to accomplish in the world. And I'm showing up as somebody who's talking about charitable giving, and I'm talking about all the potential in the world. And this group around me is going, wow, Rick, you're like the reluctant hero. You're somebody who is passionate about this. You're like the philanthropy guy. And I said, oh, wow, that's nice. And this woman who's at the table, she goes, you know what? That would be a great domain name. You should look that up and see if somebody's using that. And I said, I'll do that after the meeting, after we're finished talking. She goes, no, you have to do it right now because we're looking it up and other people are going to be looking it up. And therefore, we have to be able to get this and secure it as soon as possible. So she went on and went on to Namecheap, looked it up. It wasn't taken. She grabbed it, and then she bought it for $19 or something, and then she gave it to me before the end of the meeting. And I said, okay, I guess we're onto something here. So then I looked to see if there was a philanthropy guy website domain. I mean, the domain name, we found that, but a philanthropy guy @gmail.com website, and there wasn't. So I grabbed that. So I said, I think I'm onto something here. So that's how it sort of happened. And then it evolved into the idea of there's Richard C. Peck Consulting, and then the philanthropy guy is more of an educational forum. So we'll design those differently. We'll brand them differently. And so there you have it. And that's how it all came to be.
And how long ago was that?
That first meeting was about 2.5 years ago, but we kind of hit the ground running with should get this trademarked and so on. But it all came from, not necessarily me coming up with it, but other people calling me that. And I think that's why people laugh and it sticks, is because it kind of rolls off the tongue. You know, philanthropy is a complicated name, you know, a little bit hard to pronounce for some people. And then guy, he's just a guy, you know, he's just a philanthropy guy. So it makes people laugh. And yet it still drives the point home that we're going to talk about something probably a little bit more intense than other things. So.
Well, you clearly made a large impression if you already had individuals in that moment feel like they wanted to brand you and needed to brand you and went so far as to get your domain. So that's pretty awesome. So we have the philanthropy geek, which is Tony Macklin, on our team, and now we have the philanthropy guy. I probably need a title. But that, That leads great segue into, before we get into the trends, which I promise we will. But how did you get involved in philanthropy? Who influenced you? What was your pathway to philanthropy?
I started out as a financial advisor. I did that for 7 years with a group called American Express Financial Advisors, which is now Ameriprise. And so I was working with individuals and couples who were focused on retirement planning, education planning, tax planning, and just cash reserves, planning for lots of different things, vacations, you name it. And I did that for a while and I learned a lot, but my wife was working at Dartmouth College and she was at that time the dietitian / mental health counselor. And, she said, see if there's something here at Dartmouth that would interest you, Rick. And I said, I don't know. I'm a financial advisor. And I said, I'm a philanthropic advisor now, but at the time I was strictly a financial advisor. And she goes, well, just see. And so I looked up and I saw this position called Associate Director of Gift Planning. And I said, that seems interesting. It's estate planning. It's talking about charitable gift annuities, charitable remainder trusts, and real estate giving. And so I was interested in the idea of estate planning through a charitable giving lens. So I said, this seems like an interesting career shift. So I applied and I got the position. And then that was 2005. And I just evolved from there. I started working at Dartmouth College as an associate director of gift planning and going around the country talking to people about deferred giving, bequest intentions, things like that. Then I moved into eventually working at the medical school at Dartmouth as the director of gift planning. And then I started to do the same thing for the local hospital, Dartmouth Hitchcock Medical Center. I was director of gift planning. I was doing both at the same time. And then I started to move into major gifts, outright giving of 50,000 or more. I started moving into principal giving of $1 million or more. And I held on to the plan giving piece the whole time. And then eventually I became VP for development at the New Hampshire Charitable Foundation. So I went from academia to healthcare to finally community foundations. And I was working with professional advisors and I was working with donors and we were talking about complex giving and had a whole team working with me. And then in May of 2023, I went solo, became an independent philanthropy advisor. Obviously very thrilled to be working with Daylight and just kind of evolved from doing all those other things to now working with nonprofits to help them raise money, donors to help them give away money and professional advisors, CPAs, wealth advisors, trust and estates attorneys, teaching them how to have the philanthropic conversation.
Wow, that's a journey, and it's unusual, at least in the experience I have had, where you come to philanthropy through financial advising. So I'm excited to talk further about sort of the wealth management and its role in philanthropy, because I think you've demonstrated how one can contribute to philanthropy with a financial planning background. So we'll get to that more, but I don't want to keep our audience any longer because we're really here to talk about the trend. And we've already talked about trend one and two, and I'm just going to remind our listeners of those trends. Our first trend was the changing client base, this idea that the base of donors is changing, much more women. There's Generation X, there's immigrant entrepreneurs. So with that changing client base, how do we adapt, and what's really important to that is sort of the cultural sensitivities and some cultural dexterity around conversations. The second one is the evolving definition. So we define philanthropy as all the ways we use our resources to benefit others and achieve impact. And so we talked about that evolving definition and how one can adapt to that. So now we are on to trend three, which you, Rick, get the pleasure of sharing and presenting to our listeners. So can you please tell us, what is trend three of the eight trends in philanthropic advising?
Trend three is evolving giving vehicles. So how the landscape is changing as it relates to what charitable giving vehicles people can use to make impact.
So there is a lot of charitable vehicles, and I want to get to some of those vehicles. But let's start with first the conversation. How I think it's one thing to know about the vehicles. It's another thing to recognize that those vehicles are evolving, right? Even I'm sure in your profession, from when you were a financial planner back in the day to where you've evolved, those vehicles have evolved. But to have the conversation about which vehicle is best, you have to first have the conversation. How do people go about having this philanthropic conversation? And do we see amongst wealth managers and financial planners that this is a conversation that that needs to happen more, but it requires some learning, some training, some information, more resources? What do you think?
Well, I think it starts with a U.S. trust report that I think about when I'd give a talk. I would use the slide that talked about the different perceptions of who's bringing up the philanthropic conversation. So, for example, if you ask a high net worth individual, that person might say, well, I bring up the topic when I want to talk about charitable giving, I do it. But then if you ask an advisor, a professional advisor, a CPA, a wealth advisor, a trust and estates attorney, they'll say, well, I'm the one who brings it up. So I think the takeaway was it's sort of sadly comical that nobody really knows who's bringing up this conversation. And therefore, maybe it's not being done very well or intentionally. The client might be bringing up in the fifth meeting and saying, are we ever going to talk about giving money away? Because we seem to be talking about everything else, but we're not talking about this. And this is really important to me and my spouse, for example. And the wealth advisor or the trust and estates attorney or the CPA might say, well, yeah, I do bring it up, but I bring it up kind of, you know, when we talk about maybe naming a beneficiary of an IRA or a life insurance plan, or if the client brings it up, we kind of go in that direction a little bit, we'll talk about it. But I'm not sure that they're talking about as far as their intake form from the first meeting. What are your values? What are your goals? How do you give your time? How do you volunteer on a board? Do you give money away? How long has this been happening in your family? That type of intentionality of conversation, I don't believe exists on a uniform basis. When I see it happen, let's put it this way. When I see it happen, I'm impressed and I'm satisfied. But most of the time, people seem like they're stumbling through it. And I'll just say one last thing about that. When I've given a talk before, I'll literally ask, how do you have the philanthropic conversation? And I name four parts. A, we have it all the time. B, we talk about it on occasion. C, we talk about it if the client brings it up. D, we don't talk about it at all. And sometimes I see it's spread out amongst all four answers as far as the results of the poll. So I just think that's so curious that we continue in 2024 to evolve as what does that philanthropic conversation look like when we know $550 billion was given away, according to the U.S., the Giving USA report. So people are giving money away. So why are we not having a conversation that's as intentional as it could be?
But what, walk me through that. What is one of the vehicles, for example, and maybe an example of how that vehicle could help give wealth away or give money away?
Yeah, I sometimes will give a talk to frame it for people of four different choices. And I'll start with the four choices and I'll kind of move on beyond that. But the idea of you can give money away through simply writing a check out of your checkbook or making a gift, you know, from your credit card or some sort of a cash gift that you can make. So just kind of your classic checkbook philanthropy mentality. And that's a majority of the way people give money away. And it usually is in the form of cash. Now, there's also commercial donor advised funds. You can go to Fidelity. You can go to DAF Giving 360, which used to be Schwab Charitable. And you can go to other entities like that, Vanguard and so on. And that is a vehicle where you put money into it and you potentially get an income tax deduction for doing so. And then you make grants out of that vehicle. Instead of writing 15 checks, you could just go to your donor advised fund and make 15 grant requests. And then the donor advised fund sponsor would then distribute those dollars. So that's another way, very low cost fees and lots of investment choices. But generally, until you're getting into the higher level thresholds of, say, 3 million or more, you're not really getting any advice. It's more of a self-directed thing. Enter the community foundations, community foundations, choice number three. So you could go to a community foundation. You could say, hey, I'm interested in maybe a donor advised fund, but they say, oh, we also have four other choices for you. We have a scholarship fund you could set up. You could set up something called a field of interest fund if you have a specific area of interest out there or a geography that you'd like to give money to. Or maybe you're interested in supporting one nonprofit in the form of an endowment. Or maybe you're just interested in setting up an endowment that gives money away for a lot of the highest priorities of whatever the community foundation feels is important at that time. So you're broadening your mix, just going to a community foundation instead of one donor advised fund vehicle. You have the donor advised fund plus three others. And then I would say fourth choice, just again, in a cursory explanation, is a private foundation. So the idea of, okay, now I'm going to set something up where maybe I can employ my family. Maybe I can do some things that the donor advised fund or some of these other vehicles can't do, and have it branded as our family foundation and so on. So those are four ways that people can give. And then there's so many other things like charitable gift annuities, where people can get a stream of income and also make an irrevocable gift, charitable remainder trusts, charitable lead trusts, where you're actually giving money to the charity now, and then later the money moves outside of one's estate, for example, in one type of a lead trust, and so on and so on. There's all kinds of other things that people can do to be charitable. But I think a lot of it just starts with, you know, who are you and what are you trying to accomplish? And then we'll work through the different vehicles for you. But maybe last part I'll mention is there's also called, you have forgivable loans or recoverable loans that people can set up. And there are all kinds of, there's giving circles that people can put money into with lots of other people. If they're just trying to test drive what charitable giving means to them, they get together with other people and they talk about what that looks like, in making a group decision. So there's lots and lots of different ways, crowdfunding in your classic sense. So there's lots and lots of ways that people can make giving decisions, and the sky's the limit, really.
It truly is. I mean, between collective giving, which is, I think, grown expansively, and now you add crypto in as a way in mm-hmm. which you can give to charity as well. But I appreciate you sharing that, because I know for me, my first pathway to giving charitably was through my donor advised fund, right? I didn't even have any knowledge about a charitable Rainer trust or pooled funds, and so I wouldn't even know where to start. And that's why a philanthropic advisor or a financial advisor who knows that I care deeply about my legacy and giving away some of my wealth could be beneficial to helping me identify which vehicle and where and how best to give. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. And just to qualify what you said, the things I was explaining were almost like the containers right. which to receive someone's charitable dollars. What you were talking about with crypto, I feel like that's a whole other dimension, which is what is the asset that you're going to use? I mentioned cash before. You said crypto. There's real estate. You can give away stocks, bonds, mutual funds, life insurance, tangible property like artwork, antiques, collectibles. Royalties can come in as a stream of income. There's all kinds of ways that people hold their assets. And I don't think that is also explored enough to say, instead of nonprofits and maybe even professional advisors focusing on cash, we say to them, hey, here's an asset that you probably don't want to sell because you're going to incur capital gains. So why don't we talk about how you can maybe donate that and use it for some good social purpose instead of sitting on it and then leaving it to your heirs or selling it at some future date? Donating it might not be something you ever thought you could do. So I compartmentalize ways to give, assets to give, and also types of asset vehicle or types of giving vehicles, because, you know, one is the asset, the other one is the charitable giving container in which you choose how to distribute your charitable dollars.
And when you say container, we mean vehicles. We're talking the
those vehicles. Yeah, yeah, the DAFs and the private foundations and things like that. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. And so if it's evolving, we assume that it's it was maybe different or before. So what about this trend has evolved, and how have you seen that evolve? And then how do we need to adapt to this evolving trend?
Well, I mean, just to kind of talk about evolving from a little while back, the community foundation sort of owned the donor advised fund space not that long ago, maybe 30 years ago. And then the commercial donor advised funds came in and started to open that up and offer, again, low cost, lots of different investment opportunities in the form of a DAF. In fact, the Fidelity Charitable Gift Fund is the largest 501c3 in the United States. So a lot of people don't necessarily know that. And it's, yeah, it's this very small component of what Fidelity does. So that was a big change because now the community foundations were going, oh, who's this, what's this commercial DAF stuff? And why do they seem to be doing so well? So the trend there, not only was that you have a few different providers offering, but you also have a DAF vehicle that is growing that more and more people to this day are really interested in. And so that started to compete with the private foundations. And just for context for the audience, DAFs have about $230 billion, probably approaching $300 billion. And private foundations have $1.3 trillion. So as far as evolving, you could also say things are evolving in the sense of more and more money is going into both donor advised funds and private foundations. But donor advised funds on the whole are giving away about over 20% per year out of the DAF, spending about that much. And private foundations on average are around 6%. So when you talk about trends, I think about the idea of like what's happening with these existing vehicles or these vehicles that people are continuing to learn about. And then going back to the giving circles, we mentioned that briefly, but the idea of that is becoming more and more prevalent. People didn't even know a giving circle existed, and now they're leaning into those, trying to figure out how it informs their own philanthropy. You know, another trend I would say is the conversation around what to do when someone dies, in the sense of donor, going back to donor advised funds, there's always an advisor to a donor advised fund. So when the person passes or the couple passes, who's going to continue that legacy? So that is a hot topic right now about what that looks like beyond that first generation. And should it be a DAF moving forward with the kids managing that or making advisory suggestions to that particular grant suggestions to that particular DAF, or should it move to a different type of vehicle that we talked about before, like a field of interest fund or a scholarship fund or something that just pays out in perpetuity? So, and then back to the sophistication of the estates, you know, life insurance is being used, I think, in a more constructive way. People are starting to use vehicles, even what are called second to die policies, where you have a policy on two lives instead of one. And the second, when the survivor passes, the survivor of the couple passes, that's when the money comes in to the death benefit is then paid out to whatever it is that they want the death benefit paid to. So it could be to pay estate taxes, or it could be to go to charitable giving. So I think there's just a lot of opportunities to look at things not only from an evolutionary standpoint of things that have existed or continue to blossom, but also what's still happening out there in the form of, social impact type of investments and the idea of what would it look like to create a corporate donor advised fund or some sort of a corporate vehicle for my employees to be able to give money away.
Well, Rick, this has been awesome to visit with you. I know we're going to get you back for Trend 6, so more to come from you. But just in closing, let's just summarize one more time. What is Trend 3 and what do we need to do to adapt?
Yeah, the evolving vehicles, things are changing constantly. The advice is stay on top of the core essentials, which is, again, what do people want? What's their value system? What are they trying to accomplish? And then figure out with these evolving vehicles, what is going to fulfill that purpose? So what are the assets we can use? What are the giving vehicles we can use? What are the teams that we can bring together? All of this evolves in real time in service to the donor and in service to the nonprofits they're serving.
And that is what's trending. Thank you so much for joining us. I encourage our listeners to stay tuned for more trends. If you haven't already, please visit our website at daylightadvisors.com. And to learn more about our Certified Impact Philanthropy Advisor Program, you can learn more there as well. Please tune in next week as we welcome Crystal, who will be talking about our trend number 4. Thanks so much for joining, and we'll see you next week.